This is the Boxing Betting Show with Tom Craze.
Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 6 of the Boxing Betting Show. My name is Tom Craze. Now, last Saturday night was a pretty remarkable one for the underdog. Over in Russia, in the early evening, at least in UK time, we saw Evgeny Tishchenko, a highly fancied 8-0 cruiserweight prospect, dropping a decision to Tobiso Mchunu as a 1-9 favourite. Mchunu was available at worst about 5-1, up to about 7-1 as well. Then over in Gibraltar, Nick Webb blasted through Eric Pfeiffer inside just two rounds. I spoke on last week's podcast about how I thought Pfeiffer, with all his amateur pedigree, looked okay at odds on. So that goes down as an early runner for my very worst bet of 2021. Webb was around an 11-4 underdog and never looked anything like one. My night did improve as it went on, both with the unders on Povetkin White and the Ted Cheeseman outright, who was an underdog himself, of course, both mentioned last week coming in. But that early five for misery was compounded, really, by Chris Congo losing a decision to another underdog. Michael McKinson was available around 2-1, 5-2. But possibly the biggest shock of the night was on the Queensbury card, where Willie Hutchinson, who'd looked excellent up until that point, albeit against very limited opposition, was stepped up against Lennox Clark. Clark was available between 5-1 and 15-2 or thereabouts, and stopped Hutchinson inside just five rounds. As the ever-reliable Fight Ghost, who I had back on the show just before Christmas, tweeted, the five-way accumulator of Mchunu, Webb, Cheeseman, McKinson and Clark paid over 207,000 to one. What do you mean you weren't on it? Looking ahead to this weekend, we're going to focus on Jamel Herring versus Carl Frampton over in Dubai. I thought I'd invite back a friend of the show to help me work through it, former ESPN Boxing Insider and a man with a speed dial to some of the best odds makers in Vegas. Johnny Wilds, how are you?
I'm really well, my man. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Johnny, obviously I've got you on to talk about the weekend coming up, but I wanted to take a quick look back at the weekend that's just gone. The card from Gibraltar, Dillian White versus Alexander Povetkin, the rematch, and a few other fights on the matchroom card there as well. Now, the first fight resulted in a pretty big shock, one of the knockouts of 2020, but there was no upset this time around. Dillian White went off about 300 favourite, 3-10 fractional, won it in four rounds. Looked like he should have been a much bigger favourite, really, you know, won very easily. Caught and hurt Povetkin very early in the first round, and Povetkin never really looked right after that. Always looked a case of when, not if. Last week's guest on the show, Johnny, Al Dawson, picked out the Dillian White inside the first six rounds, which landed at plus 250 or 5-2 without much sweat. Personally, I went for the unders. Was a shorter price, but I was pretty sure it would be action from the opening bell. I didn't see it kind of being very tentative. But I wanted to kind of, I was happy to take a chunk out of the price if it got that Povetkin stoppage onside. Obviously, that never happened, but, you know, just in case lightning struck twice. What did you make of that fight, Johnny? And what was your play on the main event?
I don't think Povetkin looked right from the time that he was walking to the arena all the way to the first bell. In fact, the WBC, I believe, said after the fight that maybe he shouldn't have been in there, which was really a saddening comment to make, because if they thought he shouldn't have been in there, then maybe he shouldn't have been. I don't know if COVID was a result of him looking so lackadaisical. I don't know if Dillian just overwhelmed him. But Povetkin didn't look right, and that's not to take away from Dillian's effort and his win. It's just that Povetkin never looked right to me. As far as action on the fight, I didn't really have anything going. I leaned towards knockout, but I just didn't know how Dillian would respond, if that makes sense. And Povetkin didn't see him in great shape, so I just watched it with joy versus having to sweat out a decision.
Yeah, I mean, there was the obvious question mark. We mentioned on the show last week that I think it was 1 in 17 heavyweight rematches have been avenged. White made it 2 out of 18. So certainly history wasn't on his side, but I mean, he did everything that was asked of him. As I say, I spoke to Alan on last week's show about Povetkin's battle with COVID, and you mentioned it there. I've got to be really, really cautious here of how I'm framing this, and I'll touch on that in a second. He was hospitalized twice over the winter. And we spoke about how that could play a factor. Now, the talk since the weekend has been very much of Povetkin looked shot. He, you know, he suddenly looked old overnight. He should retire. And you could say, yes, all of that is true. But to be honest, I don't think the point about COVID was made enough of. I don't know what was said on the DAZN show, but certainly on the Sky commentary, it wasn't mentioned really, or only in passing in the intros. It wasn't kind of as the fight unfolded. I just felt Povetkin didn't look shot or kind of gun-shy in the normal sense. He looked very much like a man who'd been, well, you know, rushed to hospital twice in the past few months with a severe respiratory disease that needed oxygen. You know, he looked gassed from the opening round, as you say, and many others, Johnny. Many said he didn't even look comfortable during his ring walk. And Andrei Ryabinsky even tweeted out directly after the fight to saying that he would try to persuade Povetkin to retire. That seems quite strange to me. That suggests that something wasn't quite right. And as you say, the other tweet there about saying, look, we're not sure he should have been even in there. I personally, I think something was amiss, and whether we don't know what his camp was like, we don't know how his preparations were, we don't even know if he fully recovered, frankly, or, you know, whether he got long COVID. I mean, it could all be confirmation bias, but looking back on it now, that obviously the, you know, implied 77% chance that White would win looks, you know, he made a mockery of that. Now, obviously, with Fury and Joshua tied up, all of the talk was really about what Dillian White is going to do next. And the name on everyone else's lips was, or certainly seemed to be, Deontay Wilder. It's fun to think about. I don't think it's going to happen. It's, you know, politically, that's a tricky fight to make. Kind of acrimonious behind the scenes, you would think, seeing, you know, the result of the Joshua Wilder negotiations. Could be a tricky one, but let's see. However, Sky Bet opened that as a future market, with Wilder the 1-2 on favourite, 2-1 on, -200, with Dillian White the slight underdog at 6-4 or +150. The consensus on my timeline seemed to be that that is pretty one-sided, that White would get sparked, a bit of a mismatch. I kind of think Wilder is vulnerable enough for it to be interesting. I seem to be a little bit of an outlier here. I mean, one thing I think I do know is that it would be fun for however long it lasts. You know, both guys are really flawed. I can't see how they wouldn't just come swinging at each other. Johnny, how do you see it?
When you told me, when you sent me that DM that they opened it up 2-1 in American numbers, -200, I had to have a short giggle. There's a caveat to that. Let's go back to the short giggle. Is I would make the fight closer to 7-1. But again, there's the caveat I want to speak to. I have a personal friend who was in my wedding, DeVera Williamson, who was a former heavyweight fighter, won some minor titles in ABF. And he got sparked against Joe Macy on national TV in the first round. He was one of few that come back from a hard knockout. He had to go to a sports psychologist. We've seen the actions by Wilder. He seems to not be himself in the excuses that he's making. Getting rid of Mark Breland, who is a wonderful human being and an absolute great trainer, who's been with him forever. So there is question marks going into the ring. But let's not forget that only two fighters have ever stood up to Deontay Wilder's power. That's Bermain Stervine in fight one. We saw what happened in fight two. And Fury's gone 20 rounds with them and had to pick himself off the canvas, including the 12th round in fight one, where it took a miracle for him to get up. I don't know how he did it to this day, but there's not too many people that can take Deontay's power. And Dillian does hit hard enough, but I just think the number is terribly low. But there is that caveat of what mind frame is Deontay going to really have if he were to get in the ring with someone? Is the damage that Fury inflicted on him? You know, he wasn't knocked out cold, but he took a savage beating. I was there. That man was beat from pillar to post. So we'll have to see.
So you would open Wilder at about 1-7 on -700?
About 7-1. Just based on, you know, Dillian's a good fighter. I'm not trekking away from him, but I think that people are undervaluing Deontay right now. I think that, you know, we have to remember that, you know, the guy's a knockout artist, and Dillian does get hit with the right hand. And not too many people can stand up from that. So if he takes it, then he's got a better chance. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I don't think the prices are too far off. I tweeted out the price on the Sunday morning after White Povetkin or Povetkin White, rather. And everyone was kind of saying, well, hang on, that's, you know, that looks big on Wilder. So I think I'm the one who's seeing it slightly differently. I'm certainly not saying that, White would be the favorite. Wilder is the rightful favorite. But I don't think I would be backing Wilder at -200. I don't know. It's It's one of those fights where I think whoever lands first could go. I'm still, my hunch with Wilder is always that he's wide open to be hit, but actually he's trickier to hit than you think sometimes looking at him. Whereas we know with Dillian White, he can be, you know, knocked cold, frankly. You know, we saw Povetkin do it. We saw Joshua do it. I'd probably be on the unders again, to be honest. I think that's probably the safer bet there. But
yeah, that would be a neat fight to see. Let's see what Deontay has left in the tank. And excuse me for coughing. And let's see what Dillian, you know, can do with this much, you know, desired and I think deserved title shot, you know, for down the road.
Johnny, the other fight I was looking forward to talking to you about on last week's card was the chief support, which was Ted Cheeseman versus JJ Metcalf. Now, I've got the full story of this one, and I'm sure you're not going to mind as I tell the tale. Yeah. So let me give some context. Ted Cheeseman, I flagged Ted Cheeseman right at the start of March, and I think right at the end of February. I recorded the other podcast I do, which is Puncher's Chance for Pinnacle. If you haven't listened to that, it's available, obviously, in all of your good and normal podcast retailers. However, I was asked on that podcast, what's the bet of the month? We were looking ahead at all the fights in March. It's a monthly show. And I said, actually, it's probably the one that I like. It's going to surprise you. It's the chief support on the Povetkin White card. And I said, Ted Cheeseman, I think, is the wrong price against JJ Metcalf. I just think he's more battle proven. He's mixed at a much higher level. Metcalf is unproven. Yada, yada. All the stuff that we went into last week. I kind of stuck with that. And then last week's show, again, talking it through with Alan, he was keen on Metcalf. He said, I think Metcalf's going to win. Didn't like the price, but he said, if I had to pick, I'm going to pick Metcalf. And again, I said, no, not for me. I like Cheeseman, and especially I like Cheeseman at the price that he was. Now, I should say, actually, really great fight. From a betting point of view, really pleasing outcome. 11th round stoppage, really decisive as well. Price as big as 13-2, so plus 650, right up until about 9-1. I think some people said they got on the day as well. But there was a little bit of a gamble on Ted Cheeseman in a very certain corner of Twitter. And here's the timeline. I'm going to give the listeners a rough timeline. The third week in February, kind of mid-late February, got a DM from Mr. Wild. Says, out of the blue, I'm going with Cheese. I said, yeah, good price. The weekend after, he said, Tom, I'm going to go in again. Confidence there is building, right? And then things got a little bit confused. Now, Povetkin White got moved around. It was scheduled initially for January. Then it was moved to March, early March. And then it got shunted again because of Gibraltar. On the day of the fight, or what should have been the fight, which was early March, got another message from Mr. Wells here that says, Tom, I've gone in. I placed the bet today. When is he on? I replied saying, Johnny, it's not for a couple of weeks. It's been moved back. It's been rescheduled. It's like, okay, I'm a little bit eager then. Then before last weekend, another message. I think this one, to be fair to you, was just to kind of quell your nerves, given that you've been sitting on your Cheeseman wedge for a good few weeks now. He said, Tom, do you still fancy him? And I said, yeah, don't worry. Still looks like the value. Johnny, talk me through your reasoning on that. And ideally, I guess, your reaction when Cheeseman flattened Metcalf in the 11th.
Well, I got to preface it that everyone who knows me will get a message from me asking what channel and what time the fight is on. It's my blind spot. I can talk about a fight and then think it's this weekend and it's next weekend. I'm a train wreck when it comes to TV and dates. So I have to laugh about that, but it is status quo with me. The reason I liked Cheeseman and the fight so much was a couple reasons. Number one is, as you said something earlier, he's battle worn. I think that Metcalf is a fine fighter. I think he'll return. I think he'll do well. But Cheeseman showed me more. He had the more, I think, battle-tested career. And my only fear was is if it went to the cards and it was a close fight, but at the point of the stoppage, I thought Cheese was up by at least 3 or 4 rounds. The only rounds that really were concerning were 7 and 8. And, you know, he almost had him out in the fourth. So my thought process was, it's just a kid that was more battle-worn tested versus a kid in Metcalf that it's a fine fighter, just wasn't ready for that, and especially on that stage.
It was quite a pleasing one, wasn't it? Because you do get those sometimes where, you know, look, I I've said before that I would have opened that probably pretty close to even money each side, you know, 10 to 11 the pair, you know, minus 110 each sounds okay. But that said, had the odds opened the other way and we saw Cheeseman at, you know, 8 to 13, 4 to 7, you know, 175, minus 175, minus 160, 263 rather, I wouldn't have had much argument. I thought, yeah, you know, Cheeseman should be the slight favourite there. So, yeah, that was quite a... They're quite rare, I think, that normally if they open... That sounds arrogant, doesn't it? Normally, if they open the other way to how I see them, the odds normally come in much quicker. You know, they get even out. But that was a fairly steady line. And, you know, there was no massive early price on Cheeseman that anyone would have missed. He's pretty steady right up until fight night. So, yeah, that was a nice one. So good on Cheese.
It was fun. It was fun afterwards, too, with the banter back and forth. I mean, I was literally laughing out loud at my phone. I had to tap out. You won that banter. That was fun.
If nothing else, if I don't land any winning bets, I'm good for a couple of cheese puns on a Cheeseman fight night. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. That was great.
You're listening to The Boxing Betting Show.
Johnny, we'll move on then to the weekend's, I'd say weekend's main event. It's a kind of a quiet weekend. There is the card over in Uzbekistan, but we're going to focus on the fight in Dubai, which is another one that's been shunted around and reshuffled in the age of COVID, which is Jamel Herring defending his title at 130 against Carl Frampton. Again, this is one that's kind of been in the works for a while. And we saw, you know, going way back now, we saw Frampton get in the ring with Herring, you know, separated by Bob Arum, I think last spring, something like that. The odds are quite an interesting story odds-wise here. The bookies at the moment make this effectively a pick and fight. Most firms across the industry going even money, at least on this side of the Atlantic. We'll get your kind of cross-Atlantic view in a second, Johnny. Yeah, most going even money. Skybet, Paddy Power, William Hill, BetVictor, all even money. Bet365 going 5 to 6 the pair, which so that's minus 120, 55% each, they reckon. Some firms giving slight favouritism to Carl Frampton, however, 8 to 11, so minus 138 implies a 58% chance. 4 to 5, very, very slight favourite, minus 125, 56%. But what's interesting here is the odds actually opened the other way around in March last year. So that's the date I was referring to earlier there. Herring opened a firm favourite, actually, 4 to 9, so what's that, minus 225. But Johnny, you've been speaking to your guys over in Vegas. Can you update us on where the money's coming in and how that's flowing?
Sure, absolutely. I spoke to my guy over at the Superbook, Jeff Sherman. They have the fight right now at this minute at Carl Frampton minus 15, 115, Jamel Herring minus 105, 10 and a half rounds over minus 400, 100 plus 300. Jeff told me this is much like other fights that they book that aren't like, let's say, Canelo or a big heavyweight fight, is they don't see a lot of action until fight day. He has seen some small action on Frampton. He does have some parlays alive from the Super Bowl where people were playing them to Herring, but the action really won't get that large until the weekend. Going back to what you said earlier, is the fight did open up last year at like minus 200. We saw as high as minus 2.25 here in the States. And I don't know if it's based on the Akendo outing or not, but the odds certainly have tightened up. And I'm seeing kind of a cross market of like minus 110 seems to be about the median number right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a fight that probably won't get a lot of money if we're being honest. It's, you know, it's not a huge fight. It's going on, you know, in Dubai. So that's obviously not prime time for you guys over there either. But Johnny, I know this is a fight that you've got a strong view on as well, a bit of a lean on. And just to give a bit of context here, so let's kind of look at the key questions here. One is that obviously the weight, Carl Frampton, kind of the old question now, really, but is he suited for 130? Is that a step too far? There's a big size difference here. I'll touch on that more in a second. Herring, he's got a long way. He's a really nice story. Comes across a really great guy as well. Won a world title, but might not have the deepest record. Frampton, to the eye, looks a better, more technical fighter, but he might just be outgunned here size-wise. Frampton's injuries are obviously a kind of well-chronicled point here as well. He hasn't been very active, had one fight in 2019, one in 2020. Not many people have more than one fight in 2020. And kind of against the lower level, you know, fought Tyler McCreary, Darren Trainer. That's it since the Josh Warrington loss. Herring, you know, with all credit to McCreary and Trainer, is going to be a notch up from that. But Herring hasn't fought any elite fighters either. Ito, Roach, Oquendo. It's an interesting one, and you can see why the odds are so close. But as I say, Johnny, you've got a lean on this. And again, this is one of the one that you kind of mentioned to me a while back. And tell me your reasonings here. What are your kind of gut reactions to those odds?
Yeah, when it first opened, I thought the line was a bit high. The hard part about this fight is I really, really like both fighters, and I've done well on them from a gambling standpoint. I'm a huge fan of Frampton, collected on him in Leo Santa Cruz 1. I just think the world of him. He seems like a really good man. On a personal level, I've spoke to Jamel before. He's nothing but class act. But as far as the fight goes, you know, Tom, I pick a lot of people's brains, like Jim Karras. That guy is about as sharp as a straight edge razor out of the box. And, you know, he brought something up that I'm thinking as well is, you know, we go back and forth via DM like me and you do. And he noticed something that I kind of noticed it too, is the difference in the size. Jamel's going to come in at probably 5'10", you know, maybe 5'10 and a half. He's going to wear the 130 better. Carl's 5'5". We don't know what he's going to do at 130. We don't know what Carl has left in the tank. He's a warrior. The Warrington fight was brutal. But in speaking with guys like Jim Karras and Stephen Breadman Edwards, the trainer, they bring up the same thing, size, and they both lean towards, you know, Herring by decision. I don't think you'll see a knockout in this fight. And I'm kind of at the point where I'm leaning Herring. I'm a big fan of both fighters, but I think as the fight comes down, I think you'll see me on Team Herring.
I think there are some red flags here that you could consider probably more for Frampton. Now, looking at my kind of timeline, the general thought seems to be, at least on this side of the pond, that Frampton is a better all-round fighter, as I say, better technically, obviously much more accomplished, and that he's probably got enough to work his way to a decision. But that's the British standpoint, let's say. The red flags, I think, on Frampton here are pretty obvious. He's talking about retirement if he loses, and that's pretty much an open secret. You know, this is his one last run. If he wins, he's going to carry on. He's obviously going to try and unify and so on and so on. But if he loses, I think it's pretty much decided now that that's it for Carl Frampton. And I'm with you. I love Carl Frampton. You're one of my favorite fighters over the years. But it's never a good sign historically, I think, when people start talking about retirement before they go into a fight. We saw it.
Yeah, it's a red flag.
It's a massive red flag. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we saw it a few weeks ago with, you know, chalk and cheese here in a way. But Anthony Mundine going into the fight with Zarafa said, "I'm going to retire, win or lose," and obviously he got blasted out. That's a different. You know, obviously that's very different. He should have retired years ago, frankly. But it is a red flag. And I think if you were to back Frampton and if you lose, do you think, well, hang on, there was always that doubt there. The other is the size difference, as you say, 5 inches in height, 7 inches in reach. It's not very often you back a fighter with those size disadvantages. Off the top of my head, you know, Canelo against Smith, you would do it. I guess most people did, but you don't often overlook those kind of physical attributes to the extent, particularly when you don't expect the smaller man to knock out the bigger either. You know, I think most kind of agree that this will go long, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I think we also need to let the listeners know, too, is to be cognizant of is, you know, Carl has two clear losses. He lost to Warrington pretty handily, and he lost to Leo Santa Cruz in the rematch. Herring, on the other hand, he wasn't himself in the Shafikov fight. It's Shafikov. I can't pronounce these guys' last names. It's like me trying to find the date and TV time for a fight. But when he got stopped there, it wasn't him. His legs were done. He just wasn't ready. And then the Ladarius Miller fight, I am still amazed at that decision. That was a money team fight. It was in Las Vegas, and there was some home cooking there. I had Jamel winning that fight by one. He's got out of his deal with his former promoter. He's with Top Rank. He's getting a lot of instruction from Terrence Bud Crawford. Bo Mack's doing real well with him. I just think that there's a lot of signs to play Herring, and there's a lot of signs to maybe not play Frampton. And I just think those are the things that the listeners know where their money should be, whether who they back. It's just you got to look for some signs, if you will.
I'm going to pick your brain on the point there I mentioned about the depth of Herring's record. Now, as you say, lost to Shafikov, lost to Miller, then kind of stepped up pretty quickly, you know, fighting at national level. Within a couple of fights, he fought Ito for the WBO belt, won a decision, then defended against Lamont Roach, and then won that DQ against Oquendo. With all respect, none of those are on Frampton's level, are they?
No, they're not. And it's going to be interesting. You know, that's why I think the odds are so tight is, you know, is Jamel been fed fighters that he had a good chance against? I don't know. I mean, you know, a fighter gets in the ring, he's got a good chance to win more often than not if he's prepared. But sometimes talent takes over. So I think there's going to be a lot of questions answered. One, does Carl have anything left in the tank? Two, is Jamel the real deal? Can he defend his title at 130 against a former and very formidable champion? So it'll be interesting. But I think the odds are close based on the aforementioned.
You mentioned the over-under money coming in at the Superbook there. Can you just drill into that a little bit, Johnny? You mentioned the rounds there.
Sure. So this is one of the hard things is the totals on fights. There's a lot of people that make their plays and they do really well with them on totals. This one's at 10.5 over minus 400 and the under is plus 300. Jeff has seen limited action on that. My opinion is that most people will lean towards the over based on the knockout percentage. I mean, Carl has what, about 15, 16 KOs out of 30 fights, and Jamel only has 10 KOs out of 24 fights. So their propensity for knockouts isn't, let's say, an Oscar Valdez type fight where the guy's torching people.
Yeah, that brings us on, I guess, to the, I guess, how each guy would get it done. And again, it's a really, really even split. This is how even. Carl Frampton by decision, at start of bet 365, 13-8, which is plus 163, 38%. Jamel Herring by decision with the same firm, same price. Across the industry there, Herring by decision, 7-4 is the best price. That's with a few firms, actually. Betfit, Paddy Power, Betfair, William Hill, all going 7-4, which is plus 175, 36% on the Herring decision. A little bit shorter some places for the Frampton decision. The worst price pretty much that you'll get on that is plus 130, 13-10, plus 150, 6-4 in place as well. So that is just edging. Again, it really mirrors, obviously, the outright. Knockout prices for both are obviously further up, but again, very, very similar. There's no difference here. 5-1, 6-1 in places for Herring by KO, 9-2, plus 450 for Frampton by KO. But you can get 5-1 on either man. And the draw, 14-1, 16-1 at best as well. Points towards a distance fight, but there's no kind of real inclination from the layers there to take too many chances. I guess would there be any there that you'd rule out completely, Johnny?
I don't see the KO happening. I mean, weirder things have happened. You know, you could see a stoppage on cuts. Both guys have been known to not hold their mud too well when they get hit. So that could be a path to the stoppage, but I just don't see it happening. So I'd wipe the KOs off the board, and I would lean toward decision by either fighter. I think that's probably where your most value is, and I think that people that are betting it should probably focus on that. But at the end of the day, they got to make their own choices. You know, there's a lot of people that, for instance, you know, we're on Metcalf, and you know, we just happen to be on the other side. So in my opinion, solely is to wipe the KO clean. I just don't see it happening unless maybe Carl's a little long in the tooth and can't take the 130. That could happen. I could see that possibly, but I don't know. There's too many variables to go into that to play at only 5-1. At 10-1 or 12-1, sure.
Now, when this fight was first, I guess, rumored or first being discussed. I think I got asked the question of, you know, how would you price this? And I seem to remember saying it would be one of those fights that the prices would really depend on where the fight was taking place. You know, were it, and this is, you know, probably pre-COVID, and or it was just, you know, last March, and I was being optimistic that things would clear up. He said, you know, if that fight took place in Belfast in front of a packed crowd, obviously Frampton would not be, you know, plus money. He wouldn't be the underdog, I don't think. Certainly not at the, you know, the odds that had Herring at, what, 2-1 on at the start. You know, you'd have to make them much closer, and probably Frampton favourite. Likewise, if the fight was in America, you know, on a top ranked card out in Vegas, let's say in the bubble, you might edge a bit towards Herring, or, you know, even in crowds there as well. As it is, the fight is in Dubai, pretty much, you'd have to say, completely neutral territory. On that basis, you'd have to say, whoever, you never want to kind of second guess the judges, but you'd say that, you know, whoever earns the decision gets the decision, that there shouldn't be any real swings there. There's no home fighter to back. Would you be tempted, if you've got a fancy here, Johnny, to look at the decision, or would you be more happy going with the outright?
No, I think decision's a safe play. I think that you can, you know, take the side and then back it up on a smaller play by decision and get a little bit more value there, especially getting plus on who either, whatever charge you're backing. If you're going to be backing Frampton, you know, you can lay the $1.15 and you can take plus 63. If you like Herring, you can lay the $1.05 and take the plus 63 on decision. So I think, you know, it's depending on which way you're leaning.
I think if I had to play, I would probably go with Frampton on the outright, just because of the pedigree, just because I know how good he is when he's at his best. With Herring, I know he's a good fighter, but I haven't seen him against the same quality of fighter, and that doesn't always mean everything. But I just think that extra bit of motivation from Frampton might be enough. And in a coin toss, Herring or Frampton, I probably prefer that coin landed Frampton side up.
I have no problem with that play at all. It's just, it's going to be a hard fight to watch because, you know, I adore both guys. I mean, there's nothing to not like about either fighter. You know, on a personal level, I know Jamel, he is a great family man, a great person. Carl seems to be the exact same person. So it's tough. It's a tough one.
Okay, Johnny, get off the fence then. One bet for the weekend, as painful as that might be.
Herring by close decision.
Johnny, as always, a pleasure to welcome you to the show, and I'm sure we'll speak again very soon.
Always a pleasure. You be well and be safe out there, and wish you nothing but the best. Thank you, my man.
The shows are coming thick and fast at the moment, so I'll be back again next week to look at fights involving Conor Benn, Joe Smith Jr., Jaron Ennis, Shannon Courtney, and many more besides. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and I hope you enjoy the fights this weekend. Until next time, thanks for listening.